months being here in Rutland, and I feel so fortunate, not only because I'm with you, but because the weather made it possible for me to drive the distance. Well, that's also a reason for concern, but we'll save that for another topic. The poem I am about to speak was included in a collection printed in 1911, Suffrage Songs and Verses by Charlotte Perkins Gilman. She was a prolific writer. You may know of her. Back in the late 1800s and early 1900s and probably beyond, many Unitarian ministers would include her poems in their services on Sunday mornings. This one is titled Coming. And I am using my device for the first time, so I'm not used to it, and it's taking a moment to get to the poem. It seems to have gone in hiding. But don't despair. This is the time we are encouraged to reflect deeply, even meditate here. And now that we have meditated, the title of the poem is Coming. Because the time is right. The age is ready. Because the world, her woman's help demands, out of the long subjection and seclusion, come to our field of warfare and confusion, the mother's heart and hands. Long has she stood aside, endured and waited, while man swung forward, toiling on alone. Now, for the weary man, so long ill-mated, now for the world for which she was created, comes woman to her own. Not for herself, though sweet the air of freedom. Not for herself, though dear the newborn power. But for the child who needs a nobler mother, for the whole people needing one another, comes woman to her hour. Let's follow that with singing together as we come marching, marching, known also by the title Bread and Roses. It is number 109 in the hymnal. As it comes marching, marching.
Oh, and just a word from our sponsor.
About the sponsor card. We're all going to sing it, but here's the thing: we're going to sing the words that are on it are listed in 109. But Rebecca and I are going to lead you in a different. Melody. So, and I think it's a melody that you're probably more familiar with than the one that's printed in the book. So, just kind of follow us. And one other thing, just a personal note of myself, when we get to the last verse, verse 4, and we get down to the words that are on the last line on the first page, the way it's printed here, if we could sing, the rising of the women means the rising of us all. I think it just works better. It's more powerful.
That's what it's about, the racing out of us all. For the people hear us singing, bread and roses, bread and roses. And it is such a beautiful image, bread and roses. I love the image that is on the front cover of the Order of Service. Bread and roses. Rose Schneiderman is credited with originating the phrase more than 100 years ago, and James Oppenheim, inspired by the phrase, penned the poem that became the song we heard. It was popularized by Judy Collins, among other artists, of course. The struggle or struggles back then had to do with women in the labor force and women's rights. Rose Schneiderman was a prominent labor union leader and a feminist, one of those inspired and competent women who seemed to be able to move mountains. She was a member of the New York Women's Trade Union League and quite concerned about the working conditions in the textile mills of New England. Lots of women worked in those mills where the hours were long and the work was hard. Many women lost their lives in fires that broke out inside the mills. As a labor union leader, Rose Schneiderman spoke up against the horrid labor practices and working conditions in the textile mills. And as a feminist and suffragist, she advocated for women's rights, especially the right to vote. I believe she used the phrase bread and roses in many of her speeches. It became the catchphrase for fair wages and dignified working conditions. It also became synonymous with a strike in 1912 at the mill in Lawrence, Massachusetts, which connects to the front cover. Women must earn enough to be able to afford the basics of life, like bread. She must also earn enough to afford items of beauty, like roses. That's what Rose Schneiderman advocated for. Fast forward now. Women have the right to vote, and yes, for the most part, our wages and working conditions are far superior to that of 100 years ago. But there is still a great deal of insecurity associated with being a woman, and many of us were incensed during the presidential campaign leading up to the election last November when the Republican nominee spoke degradingly about women, about people with disabilities, about Mexicans, about immigrants, and so on. Many of us, not only women, but also men, were shocked to learn the results of the election and that Donald Trump would become the 45th president of the United States. It wasn't long after that that I learned about the Women's March on Washington. And I knew right away that I must join. I had marched on Washington for women's rights to choose in the 1980s and remember how deeply inspiring it was to stand together with hundreds of thousands of women who believed they should be in charge of their own lives and their own bodies. I knew I had to stand with women for our rights. Again. And then I watched Meryl Streep at the Golden Globe Awards ceremony in early January and listened to her as she accepted the Cecil B. DeMille Award for outstanding contributions to the world of entertainment. Wow, I thought. And the following morning, as I read reports of her impassioned speech and with the upcoming march on my mind, I was reminded of Julia Ward Howe, who wrote an appeal to women throughout the world in 1870. She wrote, "Arise then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts. Whether your baptism be of water or of tears, say firmly, we will not have questions answered, by irrelevant agencies. Yes, you can say that again. Testify. Amen.
Hallelujah.
Yes. Though Jimmy Ward Howe at that time had international peace on her mind, her legacy is far-reaching and includes initiating the women's movement in many states and working to end slavery at a time when to do so was a thankless office involving public ridicule and private avoidance. Charlotte Perkins Gilman was only 10 years old when Julia Ward Howe called on women to arise and join together for peace. Both Gilman and Howe were inspired by the same values that inspire us today. Though they were not contemporaries, they were both connected to Unitarianism. Julia Ward Howe, who was born in 1819, became a Unitarian in her early 20s. She was inspired by William Ellery Channing, Ralph Waldo Emerson, and Margaret Fuller. Charlotte Perkins Gilman, though not a Unitarian by membership in a church, was surrounded by Unitarians as she was growing up. Her very best friend was the granddaughter of William Ellery Channing. And as I mentioned earlier in the service, Unitarian ministers back then were inspired by her poetry and used her poetry in the pulpit on Sunday mornings. It is in many ways heartbreaking to be standing here today in year 2017, reading the poems and hearing the songs of the women's rights movement of long ago, and finding in them such strong connection to us today. Though we are decades and even centuries apart, we have not come very far. And yet, it is also deeply inspiring to connect with these powerful and competent women of the past. For through them, thousands of women, if not millions, were motivated to be activists, to work for change. Change that we are all beneficiaries of. Just a few days before the Women's March on Washington, I finally decided to knit a pink hat to wear. So I finally decided just a few days ago that a pussy hat would be a good thing to wear. But it wasn't until after I had gone online to read up on what the deal was. You see, I didn't much care for the word pussy. But online, I read this movement, this call, if you will, was about reclaiming women power. It was about denouncing Trump's derogatory references to groping women's bodies. It was about reclaiming the color pink, a color that means so many things, including being playful, romantic, feminine, and tenderness. Pink is also the color of universal love. And for me, joining the March on Washington had everything to do with answering the call of love. I was well prepared to march on Washington in January. In solidarity with our partners and children for the protection of our rights, our safety, our health, and our families, recognizing that our vibrant and diverse communities are the strength of our country. That statement comes from the mission statement of the Women's March in Washington. And that mission statement continues. In the spirit of democracy and honoring the champions of human rights, dignity, and justice who have come before us, we join in diversity to show our presence in numbers too great to ignore. The Women's March on Washington will send a bold message to our new government on their first day in office, and to the world that women's rights are human rights. We stand together, recognizing that defending the most marginalized among us is defending all of us. For me, joining the Women's March in Washington had everything to do with my inner compass and the values I hold dear. Values found in the Unitarian Universalist Association's covenant, in the Constitution of the United States, in the United Nations Universal Bill of Rights. It had everything to do with answering the call of love for justice, of equity, and peace. And I know there are some here today who were in Washington. Yes? Thank you. There were marches everywhere in this country and around the world, even in this tiny little village in the northernmost part of Sweden. I'm Swedish, and I thought, yay, go. It's hard to find the words to describe what it was like to be in Washington, D.C. on Constitution Avenue and Independence Avenue on the Mall that day. I arrived with a busload of women and men from my other hometown in Virginia, and we walked 2.5 miles from where the bus dropped us off to Independence Avenue. And there were people streaming in from all the side streets, all going to the same place. At 10 o'clock when the rally began, it was comfortable. You could move around. But by 1 o'clock, when the march was supposed to begin, it was impossible to move. we were standing so close together. If one moved somewhere in this mass of people, we all moved. It was daunting because we were so many people, and it could have been horrible if the wrong intentions had stepped forward. But the whole rally, the whole event in Washington and everywhere else was peaceful. It was deeply inspiring. When I looked at the reports afterwards, reports of attendance, I was so disappointed. I don't, facts are really important. And I have not gone back to really do the factual thing, looking at photographs and counting in a small area and then multiplying that by the whole area. But I am certain that we were at least a million strong just in D.C. I have never seen so many people united in the same cause, the cause of human rights, the cause of wanting things to be right and fair. I could talk a lot longer about this, but I'm going to end my message now with these words. We must resist the forces of fear and hate, the voices of regression that seek to drive us apart. Instead, we must align our inner compasses with the forces of universal values that speak to us through our faith and call us to be inclusive of all people and to do what we can to resist. Then we progress forward as one people and march together in the footsteps of those amazing women and men too who marched before us, that all people must have bread, but they must have roses too. They must have bread, but they must have roses too. Food and beauty. I'd like to invite all those among you who participated in one or another march on January 21st. And together we will respond to comments and questions from the rest of you. And we will hear from the woman. Come forward. Come forward. This is a lot easier, really, than stepping up to be part of the march on Washington and to put ourselves out there. Here, we're safe.